It is a beautiful day in southeastern Wisconsin and Earth Day as I am recording this interview with Dr. Tracy Holloway, who is a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and also part of a group called Science Moms. This is a group of scientists and moms who are tremendously concerned about climate change, and in particular, the way in which climate change in the here and now, to say nothing of in the future, is causing harm to our planet, and in particular, imperiling our children. And so they are, in a sense, trying to join their voices to, of course, a rising chorus of concern about issues related to our planet's environment, and calling on all of us to do our own part in terms of combating the effects of climate change. As I said, Dr. Tracy Holloway is a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, also as team lead for the NASA Health and Air Quality Applied Sciences team. She has worked a great deal on this issue of climate and climate change, and I'm excited that we can talk with her about this nonpartisan group known as Science Moms. Dr. Tracy Holloway, we welcome you to the morning show.
Thank you so much, Greg. It's really a pleasure to be here.
Tell us, if you would, first of all, how you first became interested in this particular aspect of science. I mean, this area of science to which you have applied yourself primarily in terms of your time and energy.
Sure. Well, when I was in college, I was majoring in applied mathematics. And, you know, I liked the classes. I think math is fun. Maybe not everybody does, but I always liked it. But there was this question of like, okay, well, what's a big problem that would be benefiting from my time and career and my life, like a lot of young people are thinking? And I thought it was really interesting to see how math could be used in studying the atmosphere, from tracking hurricanes to predicting the weather. So I went to graduate school in atmospheric and oceanic science at Princeton University, and I moved forward with research using computer models to understand the atmosphere and the planet. And so I've been doing that ever since, and I started here as a professor at the University of Wisconsin 21 years ago.
And at least for a time, your appointment at Madison, that is your specific faculty position, bore the distinguished name of Gaylord Nelson. Just remind our listeners about Gaylord Nelson and the way in which he was such a tireless champion of issues like the one we're talking about today.
Yes. Well, Gaylord Nelson was the founder of Earth Day during his time in the Senate. Back in 1970, we had the first Earth Day. And it's exciting that that came from Wisconsin. One of our own elected leaders made it happen, and now it's celebrated around the world. And at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, our Environmental Studies Institute is called the Nelson Institute in his honor.
Very good. So let's talk about this nonpartisan group of which you are a part called Science Moms. And maybe we should add right here that you are the mother of two sons. And I am very anxious to hear more about this group, when it was created, and for what purpose.
Yes. So, you know, my ever since I was a student, I've been studying scientists and became a scientist, and that's my job. And then 14 years ago, I had my first kid and I became a mom. And for me, those were always two very separate hats that I wore, you know, one during the day and the other one at home taking care of my family. And so to me, it was both surprising and exciting when I was invited to join this new initiative around 2020, when they were launching this group to bring science and information and facts to a group of the population who's very concerned about the future, basically moms. we're making decisions all the time about what we can do today to make our kids' lives successful for decades to come. And so the Science Moms program was looking to find scientists and moms who believed in this mission of trying to make this important issue more accessible and engaging to the moms of America.
So I wanted to make sure to get some clarification about something. The description that I am reading says Science Moms is a nonpartisan group of climate scientists and mothers. Should that actually read a group of climate scientists who are mothers? I mean, in other words, does everybody who is kind of officially part of this group both a scientist and a mother?
Yes. If you go to the website Science Moms Who We Are, the group of us who are all featured there are all climate scientists and mothers. But I know that anyone can sign up for the mailing list and follow and be part of the broader movement, whether they're are not required to be a climate scientist. But in terms of sort of the face of the organization and those of us who are conducting outreach like this, we're all both climate scientists and moms.
Very good. For those of you just joining us, I'm speaking with Dr. Tracy Holloway, who is a professor at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and part of this group called Science Moms, a nonpartisan group of climate scientists who are mothers, who are trying to help the general public, but in particular their fellow mothers, understand the nature of climate change, the peril that it presents to us, both in the here and now and in years to come, and is also seeking to give tools by which we can all try to make some kind of difference in this really crucial issue. Professor Holloway, one of the things that is said in the description of the group Science Moms is that you seek to demystify climate change. I wonder if you could help us understand kind of the nature of climate change and why it requires demystification. What is it about climate change that makes it maybe difficult for a lot of people in the general public, and I would include myself among them, to really fully grasp it's what it's all about and its significance?
Sure. So, you know, I think one thing about climate change that makes it unusual from other areas of science is that people fight about it all the time. And so I think anytime where you have so many people fighting, there's a lot of facts that are being thrown around and you don't know what to believe and what's true. But the basics of climate change is that there are gases in our atmosphere, and some of those gases warm the planet. And actually, our planet would not be habitable if we didn't have some of these warming gases protecting the Earth. So these aren't bad gases. They just are like a blanket. They keep us warm. And but these gases in the atmosphere have been rising ever since the Industrial Revolution because when we're burning fuel, and that turns into a gas, and it just stays in the atmosphere for 100 years or more. So we see these levels going up and up. And so this blanket that's keeping the Earth warm and has been all along is now just becoming a thicker and warmer blanket. And that is has consequences, like it changes weather patterns and leads to more extreme weather. It can lead to warmer and longer summers. It can lead to warmer winters. So the impacts of climate change are nuanced and come in a lot of different forms. But the basic idea that we're burning fuels and they're making this warming blanket of gases thicker, that's something that's really well established and not controversial.
So if there is fighting about climate change, and you're absolutely right that there is, if the essence of climate change is, at least in your mind, beyond dispute, then what is all the fighting about?
I think that there are different layers to the fighting. One layer, which is totally reasonable, is what should we do about it? And there's a lot of solutions that are available. There are different technologies. There are different policies. There are different ways of organizing the tax code. I mean, and the truth is, the Science Moms program is not advocating for one particular policy solution. There's so many policy solutions. I think there's this, anytime though something is political, related to policy, related to change, it is going to be uncomfortable. It's going to be something that gets looped into all the messy politics of our age. And, and I think then this idea that these invisible gases can be warming the planet is not something we intuitively experience. Like, when you're having a barbecue and smoke comes off and you cough, okay, I understand maybe there's pollution that affects our health. That's something we can experience. But most of us don't experience these warming gases because they've been there our whole lives and the planet depends on them. So there's a little bit of disconnect between how we experience the world and then scientists telling us that it's changing. But if you look at the facts, you can see that lines are going up for carbon dioxide, for temperature, things are changing. So I think that as people are living, I mean, I'm 50 years old, and I know that when I was a kid, we had a lot more snow here in the Midwest, and things were a lot colder in the winter. And that is totally consistent with what the data show.
Hmm. I know from talking to one person in my life, I don't want to identify them any more specifically than that, but somebody I'm relatively close to who is what I would call a climate change skeptic. I mean, not skeptical to the sense of thinking it's just complete hogwash, but skeptical in maybe kind of the best sense of the word. This person's sort of central contention is we just can't possibly know enough about the long history of our planet to know whether or not what's happening right now is just one of those sort of blips, or is it part of something relentless and that will not ever change unless we intervene in some really substantial way. The part of their skepticism that intrigues me is that idea of the history of our planet. And how is it possible for us to know where we've been in terms of our climate? I mean, how is it that we can know what our world's climate was like, for instance, 100,000 years ago or 1 million years ago or 3 million years ago? I mean, I know that's a very complicated question, but maybe you can just sort of summarize how it is that we can ascertain that kind of information, which in turn, of course, can help us understand this present moment in which we find ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a great question. And, you know, over the evolution of the planet, the continents have moved and there were dinosaurs and palm trees were growing in Antarctica. Of course, our planet has gone through a huge number of changes. I think, though, when we're thinking about how do we know, one of the main ways we know is that there's kind of clues that are hidden in the ice cores in Antarctica and in the Arctic, in trees, in bogs. And the one that I'm most familiar with that I think is sort of the most robust is that they can take ice going deep, 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 deep into the ice pack of Antarctica and go back hundreds of thousands of years, at least 400,000, but they're always going deeper. And this idea that then you can see is basically every year new ice is deposited and then it gets built on and built on and built on. And tiny little bubbles of air that are in the composition of the ice going back all those many years can help us see what the temperature was and what carbon dioxide levels were over time. And in those records, we can see the ice ages. We understand what caused the ice ages. There was just a little bit of difference of how much sunlight was hitting the Earth. And we see how some amplification cycles led to these big ice ages, even from relatively small changes in incoming sunlight. Those also help us see that over the past 150 years or so, things have been very different. And we can see that carbon dioxide is going way up and temperatures are also going up. So we can see what's happened. We have a good understanding of what caused it. And now we see what's happening and we have a good understanding of what's causing it too.
Hmm. We're speaking with Dr. Tracy Holloway from the University of Wisconsin-Madison. She is part of a group of scientists who are also mothers. They are called Science Moms, and they are raising a new alarm about climate change with this particular focus on how climate change affects our children. It's a really intriguing notion, I think. I mean, all of us, of course, walk around on the surface of the planet, and all of us, of course, are affected by climate change. But I think, Science Moms, you want to make sure that we are thinking about this, that is, we as adults are thinking about this not in terms of our own lives and the way our lives are impacted, but the lives of our children. Tell us more about why you think that is an effective strategy, shall we say, in terms of awakening more awareness about climate change.
Sure. Well, you know, I mean, as a mom, I have two boys. One is 4 years old and one is 14 years old, kind of a big spread. And, you know, I think all the time about what will help them succeed and thrive in their life. I mean, from, what I feed them for dinner to their appointments at the dentist. I mean, whether to get braces, all of these are decisions that we're making as parents that affect the well-being of our kids for decades to come. And I think it changes the way that I think about the future, because I'm not thinking about what my personal condition is going to be, but what is the life that I'm setting up for my kids? And, you know, in my role as a scientist, we're often looking at data from the past, like we've been just talking about, but also from the future. And, you know, when I first got started in this field around in the late 1990s, we would talk about the 2020s, and that seemed far away, and the 2050s seems far away, and the 2100s, and it was this change that was happening in the future. But we're already in the 2020s, and when 2050 comes along, my youngest son is going to be 30 years old. It makes the future seem much closer, and it makes us feel like, at least to me, the changes that we can implement today really are going to have a meaningful and high value impact on people that we love.
Hmm. Of course, one of the things that makes some people shy away from this issue is the immensity of the issue, the dimensions of it, and the fact that some of the things that most aggravate and exacerbate climate change are matters that are not in our direct control. And yet, Science Moms exists in part to galvanize the mothers of the world and the rest of us who are not mothers but also concerned about this to do something about this. What would be some of the most important things and significant things that that ordinary citizens can do to try and make a difference when it comes to this issue?
Well, really, you know, just talking about it today and engaging with your friends and talking with the people who are our leaders, whether it's the school board or through voting or whatever. I mean, this just having these conversations is the most important thing that an individual can do to combat climate change, because the forces that are affecting what our energy system looks like are outside of the control of most individuals. But our collective voice makes a huge, huge difference. And, you know, I'm an optimist. And so when I think about what the future might look like, I think of a few success stories that we've had in the past. Like, a lot of people have heard about the ozone hole over Antarctica. That was discovered in 1985. And 2 years later, boom, there was a solution put in place, the Montreal Protocol. And we turned the corner on the problem. And with air pollution that makes us, that shortens human lifetime or worsens asthma for kids. This is something that there was a rule put in place in 1970, and everything has been getting, the air has been getting cleaner and healthier since 1970 here in the United States. So I would like to think that our kids would look back on the 2020s and say, oh, that's when they turned the corner on climate change. That's when things started getting better on climate change. It doesn't have to be an overnight solution. It just has to be the start of a solution.
Hmm. You said something just now that raises one complicating factor, and that is the fact that the planet Earth is a lot more than just the United States of America. And of course, it's enough of a challenge just for us as a nation to get our act together and come together on this, although, you know, certainly that might be possible. We're also talking about a whole planet that is also contributing to this situation, albeit maybe in different ways or in different degrees of severity. How would you have us think about this in terms of a truly planet-wide scale?
Yeah, well, you know, I think that, you know, one thing I'm always kind of surprised about and when I travel to other countries is that American movies are everywhere and American music is everywhere and American companies are everywhere. And, you know, actually what we do here in America really has an impact on other countries, even aside from the politics, even aside from, you know, anything formal. You know, we're building this American dream, and it's a wonderful place to live. And many countries are, in different ways, inspired or seeing what's going on in the United States. And so I think that we're a leader in so many areas, in technology and education and culture, in a lot of different ways that we are a leader and having a global impact. And so, you know, to me, if we can be moving our own energy system and society toward a thriving, positive, low-carbon society, then to me, I think that that will have ripple effects around the world. I don't think we have to wait for another country to do something just for us to do it. In the same way, you know, there's not much else in our lives where we're sitting around waiting for another country to take action before we take action at home.
Hmm. By the way, what do you take away from the students with which you are working at the University of Wisconsin-Madison? I suspect if they are anything like the students that I work with in my job as a music professor, they give you great energy and great hope for the future.
Absolutely. I love working with students. I think it's the best part of our job. And, you know, they're very concerned about the future, very concerned about climate. But I think it also helps them feel more calm and secure in their own lives to know that the grown-ups that they're working with are taking these issues seriously and we're doing what we can do. You know, sometimes I meet parents or grown-ups who of any profession and background who say, oh, yeah, well, our kids are going to have to solve the climate change issue, or like there's a lot for our kids to solve. And I think to myself, why are we leaving this for our kids to solve or our students to solve? Like, we're the grown-ups in the room. Like, let's do what we can. And then, of course, it's not going to be a snap overnight solution, but we can be turning the corner and getting us on a path for the students to keep us going, for our kids to keep us going. And, you know, I think that's what every generation has been doing, trying to make a better future for the next generation.
Hmm. If people want more information about Science Moms, what should they do?
Well, sciencemoms.com is a website, and it has a lot of information from like facts about climate change in accessible ways to videos linking climate change with issues that people care about, from their kids' health to extreme weather. There are book recommendations for parents. There are book recommendations for kids. So I think that the website is a really sort of one-stop shop for a lot of information that an interested person could find helpful.
Dr. Tracy Holloway is on the faculty at the University of Wisconsin-Madison and part of Science Moms. Professor Holloway, thank you so much for your good work on this important topic, and thank you for being my morning show guest today. Very best wishes
to you. Thank you so much. You too. Bye-bye.